This program is brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you hear, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM and www.resonancefm.com on the net. And today we, that is myself and Dan Wilson, my collaborator of late.
Hello.
Well, hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello. Hello.
Ah, Dan, there you are. Yes. Today we're revisiting a show, aren't we? I hesitate to use the word repeat. We're not really repeating it as such. We're kind of revisiting it, and you will probably re-edit it in some way.
Well, yeah, it might be compressed a bit. It's interesting to review it in the context of what we've been doing recently. There's been about four or five, I don't know actually, I've lost count, but we're currently in the thick of what you call word strings.
Yes, that's right.
Which you've been emitting quite regularly since about 2020.
Yeah, it's a kind of delirium, I think.
Which delirium? Yeah, that word keeps coming up.
So anyway, so we're revisiting a program from the 20th of November, 2020, which was called Poetry and Bathroom Acoustics. And this is when we first sort of dabbled in this, when I kind of announced on air at that time that I had been emailing poems to you.
Yeah. So, and this is also before we began running it through a speech synthesizer.
Oh, yes, that's true. Yes. So I recited some poems sort of in my own voice. But in the meantime, you've sort of picked up the baton and you've called it post AI. Words.
Yeah, especially as soon as you begin feeding them into voice synthesizers, you get a sense of artificial intelligence, almost like a semblance of it.
Right.
But it's not, though. It's your own constructions.
I think you seem to feel now that it's possibly run its course. That
No, I'm just saying it's...
I would say that I have composed the poem specifically for the Resonance fundraiser. There is a short Resonance fundraising poem, which could be employed in the weeks to come when Resonance has its fundraising. So
I just think the tolerance thresholds have been reached in some people, some listeners.
How do you know that, though? You haven't had any. Have you had feedback that I'm not aware of?
No, actually, I haven't. I haven't had any feedback.
Is it the fact that you are actually wearying of it, and you're sort
no,
of
no, it's su- an intuition
suggesting up. That the audience, such as it is out there, that they might have become jaded or they're thinking.
Oh, sorry, I shouldn't be second guessing the audience. I have no idea what the audience make of it.
No.
And to me, I'm just going by intuition. I'm quite enjoying it, but I often find that the things I enjoy doing in sound aren't necessarily the things other people like.
Oh, right.
Listening to.
Yeah. I see. So in that case, it becomes self-indulgent, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a divorce. There's no ego behind it. It's very much like you've kind of collapsed into this delirium that's actually quite an interesting experience, because every so often a bit of sense pops out and it's like going on it's like a story, but it's like also like a dream. It's like there's bits which are completely unintelligible.
Yeah. Well, that's right. It's almost like I need the gibberish in order to get to that little sort of nugget of a phrase that suddenly leaps out.
Like improv.
Is that, do you think so? Is that the nature of improv?
certainly in free-form improv, you seek the moments of coherence and cohesion. And,
right.
As a listener. And
but wouldn't some people say that you should, in those cases, you should edit out all the preamble, and because that would be just like preamble, and just...
Possibly,
and just,
but then you don't... It's all relative. You don't. Then you don't appreciate the moments.
No.
If you just had the moments on their own, then you're looking for the even higher moments in those moments.
Yeah.
So it's almost like you need a kind of mountainscape of
right
of variety to appreciate the peaks.
Yeah. So in this program that we're revisiting on the 20th of November 2020, we talked briefly about the sort of lockdown, and at that point I was quite weary of the lockdown, and I sort of communicated that to you.
Yeah.
With it being like almost like a second wave, I sort of mentioned the fact that it had felt sort of almost heroic to start with, to sort of forge a way through this
crisis.
And then there's the second wave, and you think, you know, and suddenly it's changed, hasn't it?
And yeah. I think it's interesting that your poetry or your word strings emerged during that time as well.
Well, yes. Yeah. And then we do, in fact, review a poem by Hugh de la Cruz, who, in fact, so the programme we're visiting is the 20th of November 2020, and Hugh, in fact, had died on September the 28th, I think, of you know, literally just 2 months before. Mm. And we decide to review what we call a scatological poem of his.
It's quite a humorous poem, and I think he appreciated the humour in it too. It was quite a surprise, though, because you hadn't been aware of him being that poetic before.
That's
right.
And
he just sprung it on you, didn't he, at some point? He said, I'd like to read it on air.
But the strange thing is that you were aware of it. You knew about this book of poems that he had, and I didn't.
Well, at his house, right. I remember an exercise book, which wasn't just poems. It had all sorts of drawings for his inventions and notes about Catholic liturgies and perpetual motion.
Yeah.
A very eclectic person.
Yeah.
And at the end, it's just notes of poems. And I said, are they yours? And he says, yeah, they're mine. And
all of which has been lost, of course. It's all been lost because after he died, the house was emptied and everything was thrown away.
I was thinking of doing an Instagram or Twitter call-out because in your film, which is called It's My Own Invention, that's the only record of some of the documents. He briefly shows them to you and holds them up to the camera.
Right.
And I've been able to take those frames and perspectivize them and get them in face-on format so they can be kind of almost restored. But I can post them and say, has anyone seen these documents?
Yeah.
Has anyone seen these items? There might be in an antique shop or in an auction.
Well, this has led me to think recently. This has reminded me of that Tony Hancock film called The Rebel. And in it, he plays the part of an artist. And we recently exchanged a book, didn't we? There's a book. There was some people decided to recreate the artworks from The Rebel, and they literally sort of scat. They've gone to the film. They've taken pictures of the artworks which appear in the backdrop or the background of the film, and then they've recreated those artworks and then exhibited them.
It was done by the Institute of Pataphysics, I think.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking we could almost do the same with Hugh's pictures.
That's a brilliant idea.
We could sort of, in the film, we could sort of find the diagrams, and even there was even one of his drawings when he was living at Dock Street. There's a drawing he did of himself in his invention of clothing, his you know, the garment that he designed, the trouser coat, and he did a pencil drawing, and that appears in the back. Ground only exists now as in the background of this film, and we could recreate these artworks, and perhaps we could sell them as a limited edition for the fundraiser.
Yes, the February Resonance fundraiser coming up. That would be quite an interesting project, actually. Yeah. It's interesting that you were mentioning The Rebel not because of taking frames of films, but because of your likeness to the character played by Tony Hancock in the context of your poetry, which is almost elevating you into kind of rarefied states of mind.
Yeah, but in Hancock's case, he's a complete imposter because he passes himself off as
but does he know
as the artist. Oh God, yes, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's imposter syndrome. Perhaps that's what I've got, even pretending to be a poet. Okay. Yeah, so that's sort of come out of this conversation then. We might have a scheme there for fundraising by recreating the Hugh de la Cruz's diagrams and drawings, which only exist in the film It's My Own Invention.
Yeah, I mean, they're very nice drawings. He's almost like a kind of draftsman's drawings, but they've got kind of artistic value in their own right. They're very colourful. And,
yeah. Well, I thought he should have been an artist, but he thought he was convinced he was an inventor.
He'd hate any suggestion of art if you mentioned it to him. He'd dismiss it as. I mean, he looked a bit like he had kind of Andy Warhol bone structure.
Yes, he just needed a blonde wig, and that would be. Yes, he could have been Hugh de la Warhol. Yeah.
I did say that one of he kept coming up with these ideas for perpetual motion, and I thought they should be published as brain teasers, engineering conundrums. And even that he found too frivolous. He thought that was, you know, technically these things are very important. They could save the world.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to do like a children's book of brain teasers that would kind of diminish the ideas. But certainly, coming back to poetry, his poems are lost because I hadn't filmed them and you didn't film them.
No.
And they were written in a very, very shaky, spidery hand.
Right.
I think actually he had problems writing because he'd had a stroke or something.
Yes, that's true.
But he was still quite mobile. But,
well, you see, that the house was emptied by some house clearance outfit. So the chances are that the stuff ended up in a kind of charity shop in Hackney or Bethnal Green or something. So
it might be worth doing a call out of these perspectivized versions before we begin recreating these artworks.
Possibly. I think that might be a bit of a red herring, that one. But,
but you never know. If you offered enough as well, if you had like a reward.
Oh, reward, yeah. Yeah,
like a £400 reward maybe.
Yes, ounce. Well, that's very generous of you, Dan. Excellent. What a good idea.
in instalments, £2 a month.
Okay. Yes. So we should wrap up this introduction because in the other show of November 2020, we went into quite a long improvised set of bathroom acoustics where I was playing in my bathroom and you were playing in yours with various...
That was in keeping with the lockdown aesthetic,
exactly.
Which was all about improv in other people's houses.
Distanced improvisation.
Good afternoon.
I'm William English. This is Wavelength on Resonance 104.4 FM. I think it's the 17th of November 2020. And I'm speaking to Dan Wilson. So,
Hello,
Dan. So each of us is recording and looking at our phones at the same time. And then Dan will perform the miracle of sort of melding the two superior quality recordings together.
There is a slight delay, and listeners will hear a slight echo because the mobile phone network actually isn't instantaneous. There's like a millisecond delay.
Right.
In fact, we could even demonstrate that.
This leads me to an interesting issue. Do you listen to Radio 4 on a DAB radio?
No, but I have done.
You have done. Is it just me? Is it something wrong with me and our radio?
Possibly.
But when it gets to the, you know, like 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, there's like this gap. For one thing, there's a delay. So if I have if I have a portable battery FM radio in the bathroom, which I do, and you have the DAB radio on to the same station, there's a delay of you know, like several seconds. You can sort of, you know, maybe
it's
15 seconds. And then also when the clock strikes 6 or 7 or whatever, it suddenly goes silent and then comes back sort of halfway through. So you get somebody saying, this is the news, and they've missed out the 6 o'clock bit because that's somehow been eradicated.
That's bizarre. I've not heard of that. You may have discovered some new oddity there of broadcasting that nobody has really noticed before. That's quite an interesting...
It's one of those radios. I can't remember what you call them. You know, they're supposed to be quite sophisticated, like a DAB radio. And every so often, the volume on the thing leaps up for no apparent reason. The radio is suddenly blaring out as loud as possible.
Well, that's something wrong with your radio.
Exactly. Now. And then you have to run to the radio and turn it down quickly before it annoys the neighbours. And I got in touch with the manufacturer of the radios, and they didn't sort of want to know about it, really. But the suggestion was that it might be affected by radio signals or telephone signals or something that might suddenly...
Or a hacker.
Oh, gosh. Right, yeah. All right. I don't know why. Anyway...
Have you fallen out with any of your neighbours recently?
Well, I haven't fallen out, but last night it was about 10 o'clock and I heard this sort of like a bonk, bonk sort of noise near the door, which suggests like the fire escape door is sort of being opened and closed. And I thought,
yeah.
Didn't think much of it. I thought, well, it might be somebody just using the fire escape door, you know. About sort of 3 minutes later, there was this almighty row burst out. I thought, oh my God, what's this? It sounded like a drunken brawl, basically. It sounded like some sort of domestic. So I went to the door, and I can't use the language, but she was shouting, and I know who the woman is, and she doesn't normally behave like this. And she'd gone to the flat.
She's quite a glamorous lady, isn't she? I've seen her, I think, when I came to your...
It's possible. I don't think so. But anyway, so she'd gone to one of our neighbours, the guy whose door is next to the lift. If you remember, when you come out of the lift, there's a door to the left. And
oh yeah,
she'd obviously knocked on the door. The guy had opened the door. He was sort of just looking a bit sheepish in the doorway. And she was just...
Is that the door with the massive no junk mail scrawled on
an
A4 sheet?
Yes, well remembered. Yes, very good. Mm. Very good. That's him. He's lived there for about, you know, 25 years. Anyway, it turns out he'd been playing music very loudly and she was screaming at him, saying, shut your effing music off. You keep yeah. your effing music down, you know. So that was last night's incident.
And your block is quite quiet, so that's an unusual...
Yes, it's very unusual, very unusual. And I, I pushed the note through his door anyway and tried to sort of heal.
What?
Heal the... Yes, I pushed the note through his door this morning to try and...
You got involved with someone else's dispute?
Possibly. What do you... Is it your advice to just keep...
I mean, what would you even say? I heard your row.
Well,
I'm very sorry to hear that.
He came to... he knocked on my door afterwards and he was sort of saying to me that he thought the woman was very aggressive. I was suddenly worried then that he was getting a bit close to me without a mask on. So I sort of closed the door on him.
It's a real dystopian vision.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
So what kind of music was he playing?
I don't know, because I couldn't hear it.
I'd be interested to know what kind of music rouses such anger.
Yeah, well, I've sent him a note recommending some sort of radio. I said if you listen to radio via the internet, you could listen to this or something.
What, wavelength?
Yes. All right, but so today's programme is... Well, we've got a... Later on in the programme, we've got a sort of a bathroom performance, haven't we?
Yes, a double bathroom performance in the style of... in the style of 2020. This year has been a year of digital collaborations. And we hope that in the next half hour, the listeners will hear a collaboration between two bathroom acoustics.
Right.
And a rare moment of you actually performing, because you rarely bring out your instruments or well, never even. I'm not sure if you have ever recorded improv before.
No, that's true. I'm not an improvising musician, but we did a duet, didn't we? We've done a duet.
Yeah, yeah.
But the first half hour of today's programme is sort of revolving around poetry, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, that was your idea. And you've even written some new poems.
These are all that I've sent to you since Sunday. We thought we might mention Hugh's poetry as well.
Yeah, funnily enough, I was just listening to Hugh's poem, which was broadcast on the 22nd of September 2017 on your show. If we replay it again, we'll have to bleep out the swear words because he swore a few times in it.
Did he? That's very unlike him, really.
Well, he said shitting.
Oh, I see.
I'll have to bleep that as well in the edit.
Yeah. All right. So this is a poem by Hugh de la Cruz, and you seem to think that Hugh had a book of poems that he had written. I didn't know this at all.
He didn't make a big thing of it. He just said he has a notebook and there's all sorts of things in it.
We should say that Hugh died on the 28th of September of this year. And so we're probably going to try and retrieve this book of poems, which is still in the house somewhere over in Bow.
They're quite promising poems. I mean, Hugh was an inventor.
Yeah.
And in another dimension, he would have been a really good artist, but he was quite dismissive of the arts. He was very practically focused. He believed there were practical applications to what he was doing. And I think that's why his poems, the poems weren't so important for him, but it's a good poem. I can play it now if you're...
Okay then, yeah, take it away.
The man from Didcot Parkway came to tea, and when he left, we knew that it was he who had been here to see us once before, for then he had a shit upon the floor. And now again, on Woodlook vinyl flooring, new stools are present, but not just used for sitting. For if in seats of stools, for sitters sitting, wide holes be formed, thus lending new usefulness for shitters shitting, there could be stools from stools descending. Finale. And now to close, with stools descending, let us now make here an ending.
Is that it?
Is that the end?
That's the end.
Yeah. This is exactly what I said before. I said, is that the end? Yes. Yeah. How strange. It's quite a strange poem, isn't it?
Yeah. He's got a good delivery as well, very straight-faced for such a potentially comic subject.
And he paces it, doesn't he? He paces it well.
Yeah. Almost as if he's explaining a complex dynamic problem in one of his inventions.
Yeah. All right.
So this paves the way to some of your recent poems.
Yes.
Written under a possible case of COVID.
Definitely not. No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Sorry.
Please.
Okay. You've got a slight cold.
I've got a cold. Yeah.
But it's unusual for you to be writing poetry. The cold has kind of triggered this, hasn't it?
Yeah, but I suppose I was feeling a bit. I don't want to say I'm not exactly feeling despondent, but I must say that I am suffering from lockdown fatigue, that's for sure.
The stir craziness.
Yeah, I'm becoming a bit weary with it all. I think when it first started, you know, in March, there was a sort of degree of kind of heroic sort of, we'll get through this, and you'd stride on.
And it was quite novel as well.
There was a novelty to it, and you felt okay that you were surviving it and doing things and keeping busy with stuff and so on and so on. This time around, I don't feel so positive.
I mean, you're in the same boat as everyone else, though. I mean, it's not...
I know, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, that just means... Obviously, everybody might be feeling the same as me. There might be thousands of people feel much worse than me. I mean, there are people that, you know, possibly on the brink of losing their jobs and, you know, just sitting in their flat not knowing what the future holds. Is it going to last another year?
I've noticed there's a certain sector of business owners crimpers, hairdressers, gym owners, beauticians.
Yeah.
And they're rebelling against the lockdown and saying it doesn't exist, that the disease doesn't exist. But, I'm suspicious of those jobs anyway, those jobs like tattoo artists.
Yes.
And beauticians. It kind of fosters a sense of superiority anyway, those professions. And I think there's a degree of... I don't have to follow the rules.
One is hoping that there might be some upside to this, but it's hard to see it, really. I read a little book. You know this guy Žižek, this Slavoj Žižek? He's brought out this thin book called... it's called Pandemic, I think.
Well, he's quite vulnerable because he's quite sniffy, isn't he? And a runny nose is actually an invitation to viruses. A runny nose would attract the airborne particles.
Yeah, he was trying. Obviously, he's obviously trying to write something that's up to the minute and sort of, you know, kind of. But it's probably already been overtaken by events. But his upside to it was that he thought that these cruise ships where there's been sort of
And they've been quarantined on the ship,
where there's about 10,000 people on this thing about the size of Birmingham, sort of sitting in the Bay of Nice or something. And he thinks this is a good thing, that these cruise ships might go bankrupt. He's against the idea. He thinks they're an obscenity and that people shouldn't be sort of travelling like this anyway, these kind of world tourists sitting on this. You have to be pretty wealthy to even get on one of these ships. But anyway, that's by the way.
Well, my dad was looking actually to become a jazz guitarist on a cruise ship.
Oh, yeah.
Because apparently it pays well.
Well, there was a time when you could travel to America on a ship and you could travel for nothing if you did something, you know, if you performed music or did whatever.
Or scrub the floors.
Exactly, yes. No, I was thinking more of something artistic, you know, like reciting poetry during dinner or something, you know. Shall I start with my poem?
Yeah, which one?
Well, I'm going through them systematically. This is Ode to a Fruit Fly. Nay, okay. Grinling gibbons could not design you, flute fry. Yea, badgers vaccinated in perpetuity, Kevin's broadsword. We sleep inactive as blackened shrews in dread of crimes yet to be believed. And yet, you still fly, fruit fly. Hand me my vexation, Hillary.
I've underscored that with some music for your benefit.
Okay.
Just let that settle. William, just as a bit of between poem banter, what's the point of poetry?
The point of poetry?
Ugh. Sorry, yeah, I was just being provocative.
The point of poetry, I couldn't possibly tell you. In fact, I suppose it's one of the arts that I've had the least time for. I don't read poetry at all.
So this is quite unusual for you to have suddenly brought into the world these poems.
Well, I find that I can write things, strangely. I mean, I don't write hardly at all.
Well, you're the author of Perfect Binding, which is available now.
You are the designer of Perfect Binding. Yes, quick plug for the book. Yes, thank you. Yes, I'm the author, such as it is. I mean, basically, half of it is transcripts of interviews. I'm sort of a reluctant writer, but I do find that I can write things if they're aimed at one person. So I've sent these poems to you. I mean, these poems would never have got written if I wasn't going to email them to you.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. And it's so almost like I need that. It's like I need that. It's interesting, actually, because I just thought about this, that Peter Blake, the artist, used to say that his paintings were like letters written to one other person.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because when I used to do tape dropping, those cassettes that would be anonymously dropped in public, which I used to broadcast on Resonance on the Hellebore show, I was imagining one potential listener.
Right.
And often I'd have very clear ideas about who those listeners were.
Yeah.
Someone in a laundrette or an employee of an office. And those tapes wouldn't be possible without imagining right. the one single listener.
And I think, there is also some theory that if you're an actor, or if you're having to deliver a speech or something, it helps apparently if you kind of imagine you're talking to one person and you speak to that person. But with the poems, these poems basically were all emailed to you. And yes, I wouldn't have written them otherwise.
Oh, suddenly I feel a lot more honoured, entrusted with these unique
well, perhaps
emissions.
You could. I wonder if that makes you a muse.
I'm a very scruffy muse. But...
Okay, here's another poem. Ode to Bladderwrack. Indomitable.
Hang on.
Oh.
Is that a seaweed?
Yes.
Okay, continue.
Yeah.
Sorry. Apologies.
Oh, that's all right. Indomitable yet varicose, shall I compromise? And shrinking, past, but thorough in its extraction.
Can I interrupt?
The three-legged...
Do this again. Do this once more, but much more slowly. These are powerful lines. They need to be much slower.
This is outrageous. Excuse me. Who's the performer here? I mean, I should try and start again, but my equilibrium is actually...
Get in the mood, you know. Imagine yourself on the stage.
Yeah,
and,
right. All right, we'll try again. OK. Ode to Bladderwrack.
Hang on. Is that a seaweed?
Yes.
OK, continue.
Indomitable yet varicose, shall I compromise? And shrinking past but thorough in its extraction... The three-legged unicorn was just one of a bright and dark vagueness descends. Broken scarlet blubber with salt. Vehemence. Asda. Hello?
Yeah, very good. You missed a bit.
I didn't.
Sent from my iPhone.
Oh, God. Right, OK, all right.
This is quite significant, actually, this sent from my iPhone. It almost suggests there's a technological gateway allowing these.
Well, this is part of the whole thing of it, really. It's like, this is what I mean, yeah. They were written on the iPhone. I've written them on the iPhone, and I've sent them to you.
Yeah. There's a kind of immediacy, isn't there?
Yes, and this might be the beginning and end of my poetic career.
I've got a query on this poem.
Oh, yeah.
On one of the lines, it says, the unicorn was just one of a bright and dark... ...
Yeah.
Vagueness descends.
Yeah.
I'm curious what happened in your thought processes between those two ellipses.
I couldn't possibly say. You can't analyse a poem in that way. When I was inspired to write this piece, I was sort of obviously in a trance.
Did you do it with a certain bloody-mindedness? Because I sense these are poems all poking fun at poetry itself.
Well, that's true, but I didn't know you were going to say that because I thought we were supposed to maintain a sort of straight-faced kind of... Yes, of course, they're ridiculous, aren't they? I mean, they're...
We'll cut this bit, no.
They're absurdist poems.
Get back in the mood, sorry.
All right.
I punctured the illusion.
Yeah.
So I'll get this backing music up. I've got some Bartok going.
Oh, right.
Background.
Oh, that's nice, yeah. I better get some more poems done. Perhaps you don't need them all, I don't know.
Well, no, we need them all.
Okay.
Get them all done.
I better get on then. This is a collection.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a collection.
What's next?
This next poem is called Film Review, a poem by laureate William Durant English. That's a bit highfalutin, isn't it? We might need to take that out. I don't know.
Leave it.
Very tongue-in-cheek. All right. Okay. Just taking a deep breath. Shall I misdirect in enveloped mirrors? Charlton Heston in Pony Express. Reviewed and damned with apple turnovers as celebratory gewgaws. Blind as a bat. Yet reviled as buggered vitriol. In the manner of Giotto, that brush with sfumato, Annie Oakley kicks Buffalo Bill in the balls whilst ordering an enema with a paper umbrella.
Sorry. break. Carry on. Sorry.
I can't get to the end of this one. Okay. Right. There's another stanza to come. There was something on the radio this morning about... it was about poetry workshops. I think it was on Radio 4 or something. And they start to talk about these things like stanzas and sonnets and tankers. And there's rules for all of them. And I think it makes you wonder if you're entitled to try and write something called a poem, unless you're familiar with all of that kind of...
I think it's called free verse, isn't it, when you're not adhering to those conventions.
I wonder if it's called prose poetry, because it's just sort of, you know...
It's just iPhone poetry.
Yeah. So the missing stanza...
Do you want me to erase that? Because you've just lost a lot of integrity by bursting out laughing there.
I think perhaps you should, if you can.
Actually, no, it's all right. I'll just leave it all
so
in.
So shall I just carry on where I left off then?
Yeah, OK.
OK. Plead for mercy, Hugh Gaitskill as a famous monster of filmland. Always too late. Too late. Invade the Isle of Man. Hugh Gaitskill as a famous monster of filmland. That was a sort of pop art painting done by Richard Hamilton back in the 60s or something.
Okay.
Anyway.
Are these films you've seen recently or...?
Well, Charlton Heston in Pony Express I watched on the TV just the other day, or might have even been yesterday, I can't remember now. It's a really, really dreadful film. There's lots of these really bad films on. If you don't subscribe to Netflix or any of these things, which I don't, then you're not left
with much, right?
You're left with a lot of these 1950s westerns and things.
Mm. It's a coincidence, because I've just been listening to Charlton Heston, the song by the Irish band Stump.
Right.
I don't know if you know that.
I've never heard of it, no. Fascinating. OK. Here's another poem.
Well, I was going to ask about Annie Oakley kicking Buffalo Bill in the balls, but...
Well, that was sort of in Pony Express.
Oh, that actually happened in a film?
No. She doesn't kick him in the balls, but all these characters are in it. There's Annie Oakley and Wild Bill Hickok, but Buffalo Bill, which I think is Bill Cody, and all these characters are sort of coming together in this town, you know.
That's a good advert for the film, actually.
There was one on in the morning the other day called Serpent of the Nile, which was about Cleopatra and Mark Antony. And it was a talk about kitsch. I mean, you couldn't imagine how the film ever got made, really. And it's extraordinary that it's still circulating, but it is. But the production of these things was such that, you know, they must have cost so much money at the time. What were you going to say?
I was going to ask what's next.
Well, the next poem is And Yet.
Ooh.
Okay. And Yet, second edition. In parallel, the dread growth molars conflict with engineered vacuum. Mine wheel bucking blighty. Anthony checked the accordion. It's grinding again, he clenched, variously spitting tacks and cream into a leather wallet, an heirloom, blind-stamped and breastfed. And yet, second edition.
Sent from my iPhone.
Right. The next one's a very short one.
Okay.
And it's called Vole and Sparrow. And I don't know why, because the vole and the sparrow don't appear in the poem at all. So here's the poem. The successful victims clung to the cliff, decapitated by octopus blades. Habitat, mercy, rewarded by. Vince Eager stage left. Red muslin ginger compress. Sent from my iPhone. You're laughing at my poem.
Sorry.
Right.
Is it okay if you're in a poetry reading to laugh at the end of a poem?
Well, not if it's supposed to be serious. I suppose it depends on if you think the poem is ironic or something, then of course, yeah, I suppose it's okay to laugh. But you might cause offence to the poet. I mean, in my case, I think if everybody burst out laughing at the end, I'd feel I'd achieved something.
Well, I think the listeners will be asking, where can I purchase these?
Really? Gosh.
Well, I don't know.
Building my hopes up now, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Now, this is an interesting one. This is called Homage to Kurt Lemberg.
Who's Kurt Lemberg?
Well, I should...
Well, we can explain afterwards, maybe.
I'll read the poem first, and then perhaps we can talk about Kurt Lemberg. I gave you my CND badge, Kurt. I got your hair cut. You were lost in London. I put you on a plane to Australia, where your brother was waiting. You slept overnight in the dining room, and I told you not to touch the gas tap. In the morning, the whole place was full of gas, a time bomb. I gave you a CND badge and put you on a plane. Kurt Lemberg. Well, now, you see, that actually is authentic. I mean, that one...
It had the truth is stranger than fiction.
Yes. As I was reading it, I felt sort of more confident about reading it because I know that it's true.
And you're angry?
No.
Well, Kurt Lemberg filled the dining room with gas.
Well, yes, I know.
After he told him not to.
It was a long time ago. I mean, he was a very strange guy. We, as you know, Sandra and I ran this vegetarian restaurant in a basement in Borough Market from 1980 to 1990.
Well, that is the dining room reference.
Dining room, that's right, the dining room. And this guy walked in and he looked virtually like a pretty long hair and a beard and the whole caboodle.
Yeah.
With an Australian accent, and he just sort of said... Anyway, we gave him a bowl of soup, and I don't know how it came about. We said, you know, he chatted to him, and we let him wash up a bit, you know, for a couple of days and something.
What, taking Hugh's role? Hugh was the washer-upper.
Yeah, might have been before Hugh, actually. This is way back. This has been about 1981 or 2 or something. In a way, it was a bit, you know, it was a bit stupid of me, because I felt... You feel like you're being charitable by offering this guy, you know, some work to do, some washing up. But of course, in fact, by today's standards, he was completely inhygienic. I mean, he, I don't know. So we put this plastic apron on him and some rubber gloves. But he was not really, strictly speaking, he should not have been washing up. But anyway, he kept on saying, "Well, if you could, can you take me to the Australian embassy, which was at the time was on the Aldwych?" And, you know, I had a dark blue jacket with lapels and I had a CND badge on it. I don't know how it came, but we went to the Australian embassy and it turned out his brother, Kurt Lemberg's brother, had been looking for him. He was in Australia and he'd sent out this kind of call, like, "Where is my brother?" And it seems the guy had just got on a plane somewhere. It seems like, I don't know how or why or whatever the story was, but somehow or other he'd got onto a plane and had come to London, and he shouldn't have been here at all. You know, let's say he was a bit absent-minded. He didn't know quite what to do with himself. And
Was he an artist?
No, nothing to speak of. Anyway, we cleaned him up a bit. We got him a haircut and a change of clothes. And I gave him this dark blue jacket, which had the CND badge on it, which I thought was quite funny because I don't think he had any idea what CND was. And ultimately, we took him to the airport and got him on a plane back to Australia where he could join his brother. But he spent one night in the dining room, which was this restaurant. I didn't want him to come home. With us.
Yeah.
He can sleep in the restaurant on the floor or something, you know. But I said to him, as we left that night, I said to him, "Don't put the gas on." There was a kind of, there was one of these, a big, like a key, you know what I mean, that turns on the gas cookers, which you turn that off and it means the gas cookers can't be turned on. And I said, "Look, just don't touch anything until we come in the morning. We'll be along at 8 o'clock in the morning. I'll make you a cup of coffee then." Anyway, so... We got down there sort of early in the morning, sort of like maybe, I don't know, 9:30 or something. That was early for us. And as soon as I opened the door on the street level, the smell of gas hit us. And I thought, oh my God, he's left.
The one thing that you asked him not to do.
Exactly. The one thing that he wasn't supposed to do is what he did. And he'd basically turned on that gas tap and... turned on some of the rings. the whole place had just filled up overnight with gas. And if, I mean, if somebody had struck a match, I mean, I don't know what would have happened. There would have been an almighty explosion. So one had to sort of just quickly turn the gas off and open as many windows as we could. Anyway, so that was Kurt Lemberg.
Wow.
Yes. It reminds me a little bit of that. There's a Renoir film called Boudou Saved from Drowning, where a guy takes somebody in. And then they remade it years later with Nick Nolte, a Hollywood version, which is just crap. But the Renoir film, I think it was made in the 30s, and that's about somebody. I think he saves him from drowning and takes him home. He feels sorry for him. And the guy makes their lives hell, you know. He takes over the whole thing, anyway. So that's that.
It's like history repeating, except it's cinema.
Yeah.
Finding an outlet in your... in your world.
Yes, yes.
Some of the strange synchronicities in your life do mirror the works of fiction. It's almost as if someone is actually writing an implausible story with too many coincidences.
Right.
Anyway.
I actually still wonder, you know, that was in about 1982, 1981. I still think about him, actually. Whatever happened to him?
Have you ever Googled him?
No. It's spelled
that might open.
Well, here it is. The first time his name has been broadcast. So he's Lemberg. So if anyone's listening in Australia, they could perhaps tell me what happened to him. Ooh, okay.
Interesting.
Okay, the next one.
Okay.
This is called Not a Sonnet. Embargo me, my backpack. Granted. Doodle a lamb on cowhide, stretched. The Edinburgh Tattoo. No, this is not a haiku, not a sonnet, not a concrete tanker. Imbibe the drivel. Vauxhall Velox. Invite a stranger to a bar mitzvah, overflowing with kippah ties. Branded, homogenous, grisly as fresh lights. Acupuncture.
That one has the impression of being written by artificial intelligence.
What, by a machine? Well, yes, that's quite a good point, isn't it? There is no reason to it, but it's just sort of, it's just words sort of strung together.
Word salad.
Word salad.
As served at the dining room.
Yes. This one I call latest inspired work, which I think I sent to you...
this morning?
I think this one sent... No, this was sent at 5:27. You might not have even seen this one. Have you seen this one?
Esteemed exhaust pipe.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. Okay. So this is latest inspired work. Esteemed exhaust pipe, vaulting easily under the articulated cement lorry, the Caper Cayley stopped to think. A viaduct in Brisbane, but not cascading in winter. Dredging subsided. A half bottle of Brewy, corked. Brick red tiles slid off the roof and struck the retired donkey trainer. Barabbas was not a team player. The author.
One of the things missing from all these live-streamed events that I've seen is audience applause.
Yeah,
and that's what's missing here. Applause.
Applause. Well, I wouldn't expect applause. A few chuckles and laughter would be fine.
No, I can clap.
Well, there we are, Dan. That's. I think that's it for now.
Well, that's a fascinating glimpse into
what about your poems? Aren't you going to read a poem?
No. It's all a trick to get you to read your poems.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay.
Actually, I have got one very short poem
right.
that I can just dovetail in here to end this part of the show.
Right.
It's almost a haiku, and it's got one floating syllable in the middle line.
Yeah.
So this is it. It's called Hauntology. Michael Benteen tapped on the charity shop window. Shapeless forms within.
Right, 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 right.
Welcome. I'm joined by two toys.
One is a bear who is holding a sign extra, and in the other hand he's holding a bell. It's a wind-up metal toy. How do you feel about toys as instruments?
Toys as instruments?
Yeah.
They're fine. Any sound making object is worth its.
I like the idea, but I do remember. I think it was John Wynne actually who said he was put off. And it's almost like if anybody was playing with toys, it was immediate a put off for him. He didn't like the sort of he was sort of averse to the idea. But
I know what he means. It's more that's more visually. We're lucky. We're on radio, so nobody can actually see what we're using.
Ah, I see. Okay, I quite like the visual aspect of it actually. But so the bear is about 6 inches tall, and he's wearing like yellow dungarees. The bell in one hand, but the bell doesn't actually ring as such. He just sort of he shakes the bell, but it doesn't ring. And the other hand has a sign that says extra on it, sort of selling newspapers or something, I think. The other toy is a girl, I suppose, who's supposed to be a what do you call it when you bounce the ball up and down? Is that basketball? I suppose it is. She mechanically, both of them need winding up, and she sort of, the ball bounces up and down. And then on percussion, we have the flexotron, flexotone. So I suppose they're basically three percussionists, right?
Should I explain a bit what we're doing?
Yes.
Well, William, you're in your bathroom in where?
On the border of Islington and the City of London.
Okay. And I'm in Hertfordshire.
Yeah.
In my bathroom.
Yeah. So you're in a bathroom and I'm in a bathroom.
The most reverberant room in the house, in most people's houses.
Yeah.
Assuming you haven't got a mansion.
We're going to play a sort of duet, aren't we? We're sort of playing
each
other.
And I mean, one of the traditions is in a bathroom, you never have electrically powered appliances.
Right.
So, and you were worried about using toys. Toys are perhaps the most ideal thing to use as sound-making objects in bathrooms.
Yes. I've got a small transistor radio as well, which is sort of run on batteries. So, and then, of course, we have the bathtub with... I've got like what I use as a watering can, which is a great big metal jug. And then something which something for gardening, which is a sort of... Now isn't working at all. It's supposed to send out a spray, but it's fairly pathetic actually. Keeps breaking down. I don't know why. It's such a simple
Does it work thing. With what is it? A water sprayer?
Yes, it's one of these hand-operated water sprayers. But half the time it doesn't seem to work. It's as though the spray device is jammed up. But it's anyway. So we might have to abandon that.
If it probably still makes some sound. I mean, I've got lots of broken things here. I've got this horn that doesn't honk. It just goes.
Right. Very good.
I mean, that's broken. I mean, at least it makes some... It can rattle like that. I can do that. The idea is, though, that we sound out each other's bathrooms via a telephone.
Yeah.
Acoustically explore. This is a very much a lockdown 2020...
Can you hear the radio now?
Slightly, yeah. Oh, I heard that. That was quite an impressive blast.
Thank you. Oh. Are you still there, William?
No.
I had to fish my phone out the bath. I'm not sure if it's still working.
Your phone's in the bath?
You just came out the bath. It's good that you're responding to me, because it means it's still working. Hello?
Dan? Okay, what do you think? You think we've finished?
Yes, I think that's enough.
I think it probably is, isn't it?
Well, sign off properly with a good night and...
I don't know how to do that.
Oh.
This programme has been brought to you by Resonance FM. If you like what you heard, please support our work by making a donation at resonancefm.com/donate.